Today's daf in Masechet Menachot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Nun Vav. So let's just remember where we've gotten stuck, because we're going to have to figure out the answer to that question we started with yesterday, I should say ended with yesterday, and that was, why do we have the word Oto in the Pasuk about the Sa'ir Nasi that implies V'shachat Oto and only Oto, as opposed to what? So first we thought, as opposed to some other Sa'ir. What would be that other Sa'ir? Well, I mean, if this is the Sa'ir Nasi, so it could mean this Sa'ir of the Avodas Kechavim, or it could mean the Sa'ir of the one famous Sa'ir, Nachshon. And that's the one that wasn't brought l'shem chet, and therefore it wouldn't require tzafon. That's what we thought before. Then we realized we would never have learned a shoah from Dairis anyway. So we couldn't need it for that. So therefore, what do we need it for? So we've tried all kinds of things. Maybe, I mean, the nicest one, of course, was this Sawyer, not another Sawyer. But when that didn't work, so we said, okay, so maybe it's not a Sawyer as opposed to another Sawyer, but maybe it would actually be the thought that the person doesn't have to be B'tzafan, only the carbon has to be B'tzafan. But then we saw that we learned that anyway from Reb Achia, so we don't need it for that. So as we said, okay, so then maybe it comes to tell me that we don't need birds to be B'tzafan. But then we said, doesn't make sense. There's no way of learning out a bird because, after all, there's no din of the bird requiring, learning from its son, because the Ben Son, the Kavachomer, was not a very good Kavachomer because it requires a Kli, and the Malika doesn't require a Kli. So therefore, we said today, and this is where we're up to, Ela oto b'tzafon ve'ein pesach b'tzafon. So now we're trying to use it to tell me really, I mean, this is really a very much less impressive drasha, but okay, what can you do? All we have left to say is oto b'tzafon, and for some reason, this would be the place where we would be told that not a pesach. And Pesach doesn't require B'tzafon, but the question is, I mean, why would I have thought that a Pesach requires Tzafon? And actually, we know that a Pesach is not Tzafon from the following braita that explains Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov's svara. Pesach, no need to tell me that. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov nafka. Tanya Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov omer yochu yehei Pesach, Tzafon. Why would I have thought that? Because of a kavachomer. I would have thought, look, a carbon ayla, there's no particular time that you have to shech the carbon ayla. Carbon ayla, whenever you want to bring a carbon ayla, you bring a carbon ayla. But when it comes to a carbon pesach, oh, now you've got a very strict time limit over there. It's got to be dafka in the afternoon from chatzos. I mean, that's like, whoa. So if the ayla that doesn't have any particular time, nonetheless, it definitely requires tzafon. This Pesach, which is really hot stuff, I mean, it's got a kavua zman for its shchita. Shekava lo zman l'shchitato. Eino din shekava lo patzafon. For sure I would need tzafon, right? That's why I need the pasuk to tell me, says Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, otherwise. No. But actually, as Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov himself points out, an oila is more chamor. And therefore, we would not be able to learn out of Pesach from an Eila, because an Eila is actually Kalil on the Mizbeach, which makes it much more Chomor. Okay, so you know where we would learn the Pesach from? We would know it from a Korban Chatas. Chatas doesn't have a particular time, and it's not brought on the Mizbeach completely, and it still requires Tefillin. Yeah, but it has a different Chumrah. Its Chumrah is Sheken Mechaper Adachai V'Kritot. Remember our standard response to learning something from a chatas. How can you learn from a chatas since that's so chomer that it's mechaper even on a chi of chorus? Okay, fine. So we'll learn it from the asham. The asham doesn't need dafka to be mechaper chayvei krisus. Okay, so maybe let's learn it from there. No, but an asham is kodesh kodeshim. Asha inkein a pesach is only kachim kalim. So maybe the Torah is more machmir on kodesh kachim to say that it, bedavka, should be actually more chomer than a Pesach. Maybe that's why it required tzofen and a Pesach. As a matter of fact, even if you would want to go back and forth and you would want to make a mahatzad, well, I'll tell you, Eila Asham Tochiach, okay? But if you say Asham, after all, is it up? And I'll tell you, Eila Tochiach, and so on. It doesn't help because anything that you bring me that requires tzofen is going to be kachim kachim. And therefore, I could say the common denominator of any case that you bring is that it's all kachim kachim. Masha ein kein, the Karban Pesach is not kachim kachim. So forget it. Mikula namish kein kachim kachim. Anything that you try to bring me that requires tzofen requires, it's also kachim kachim, and therefore it has all the other chumras to it. Okay. And you know what? I refuse to be hassled any further. I'm going back to what I said originally, and I think what I said originally makes sense, and that was oto bitzafon, and not the shochet himself. Only the karban needs to be bitzafon, and the person who's doing the shlita does not need to be bitzafon. And I know you objected to that yesterday, and you told me, no, what do you mean? I don't need oto to tell me that, because I know that from Rav Achia, remember? No, I don't know it from Rav Achia, because you know what? Rabbi Achia, lav lamute shochet b'tzofen d'dias. We misunderstood what Rabbi Achia was coming to tell me. What Rabbi Achia was learning was, ein ha-shochet b'tzofen, but the mekabel is b'tzofen. So therefore, the shachat oto in the pasuk legabi the oila, not legabi the soyer. We thought that that was the marker for being memayet the shochet. It's not the marker for being memayet the shochet. It's the pasuk for being marb and the mekabel. That the mekabel definitely does need to be bitzofen. And therefore, what he's coming to tell me is based on our understanding that the shochet doesn't need to be bitzofen. How do we know that the shochet doesn't need to be bitzofen? That we need v'shachat oto by the sayer. But I thought we had a pasuk for that also. Mekabel, we had the pasuk of lakach, and then we had the extra vav in vilakach to tell me that not only vilakach the dam, but vilakach himself. So we knew it from there that the mekabel had to be bitzofen. So we don't need Rabbi Achia to tell me that the mekabel is bitzofen. So that's not so. So we're back where we started from. No, the truth is that Rabbi Achia does not see the vav in the velakach as enough of a remez that the kohen has to also take himself. So lakach vilakach lo mashmele. He did not hold of that drasha, and because of that, we ended up saying that indeed we needed to tell me that the shechet does not have to be bitzafen, and then we have his diak that the mekabel does have to be bitzafen. Okay, so this allows us to finally move ahead and to take a look at the chiyuv in the Mishnah. That was our big chiddush, and that was your chayiv separately on lisha, on aricha, on afia, or on anything else, which included even kituf, we said yesterday. So, says Rav Papa, you know, if you did go ahead and you baked a mincha b'chimutz, you would be chayev two different malkios by definition. One for the aricha of the that you had to be over on aricha if you baked it. So look, Lamaisa, think about it. So let's say you make a nice, beautiful braided challah, right? But you haven't baked it yet. So then you haven't baked in the shape of that aricha either. As long as you bake it, the aricha is really incomplete. Until you bake it. Once you bake it, then you are completing and making that the permanent form of the challah. And that would mean that every time you do an afia, you are doing an aricha. So therefore, it would turn out that you would be chayev on aricha just by doing the afia, even if you did not do the aricha yourself. Now, if that's true, and this is what Rav Papa is saying, so then the braita that we said, which was the mocker of the limud, we said, ma afiyam miuchedet. Remember, we learned out from the fact that the Torah says, lo te'afer chametz, that just like afiyah is a ma'aseh yechidi. So it is on its own a very specific act that is part of the preparation. And your chayev aleha bifnei atzma. So isn't that pretty clear that a ma'aseh yechidi is a ma'aseh yechidi? It's not two separate things. It's not the aricha and the afia by definition, which is what Rav Papa is claiming. And here it's saying bedafka, the whole point of the afia is that it can be a separate chiyev from the act of the aricha. And the aricha does not have to be together with the afia. Yeah, that's not a problem. The Braisa that's talking about, where by saying it's a Maisa Yechidi, is referring to a case, Hada Orech Hu V'Ofa Hu. The same guy goes ahead. He does the Aricha, then he does the Afia. He's Chayev separately on the Aricha and on the Afia. What Rav Papa was talking about, where somebody else did the Aricha. Now, as soon as he did the aricha, that person was chayev. So therefore, if in that case, if orich chavre v'yoivle, and then the guy that takes it from the one who was orichle, he went ahead and it was ofale, so then there is the actual, separately from the afia, there's the actual completion of the aricha, which bakes it into shape. And therefore, there would be two separate acts here. One would be the act of the orech. That's a separate act. One is the act of afia. That's a separate act. The fact that you complete the other person's aricha in the course of your afia does not mean that the afia is by definition the aricha. There needs to be an act of aricha. So therefore, if somebody else does the aricha, he does the aricha. He's going to be chayim on that aricha. So that means each one is, in fact, a ma'aseh yechidi. Now, we've got this fascinating situation in which what we seem to be doing over here are consecutive acts of being koveya the chimutz in the mincha. So those acts could involve, first of all, doing the lisha, and then doing the aricha, and then doing the ketifa, and then doing the afia. So that means, even though you've already done it, you've already made your mincha chometz, you can keep adding to the level of chimutz in the sense of, well, up until now, it was only a dough of chametz, and now it's a nice-shaped chalav chametz. Or until now, it was only a nice-shaped chalav chametz, and now it's a baked chalav chametz, and so on. So each one of those is essentially adding an additional level of finish to the chimutz. But that means that it's possible to add the same act, essentially, because you're being over on that one iser that the Torah told you, which is lo te'aseh chametz, but it has different parts, and each part is subsequent, in that order, is going to be an additional element of chimutz, correct? Well, we've got a lot of situations like that, and they don't necessarily, if we don't have a mocker, they don't necessarily bring you a chiyuv for doing the same thing in a different form again. So let's talk about a case like this. We've got a bechor. Now, this bechor is ochazodam. Now, this bechor has got very high blood pressure. It's about to die. So let's say it got a sunstroke or something. Now, lemaisa, what it needs to be done for it is, surprisingly, and this is actually true, one of the best things that you could do for such a circumstance is to let blood, which will instantly lower its blood pressure, obviously. And that will, even though it sounds very old-fashioned and medieval, it's actually very effective. So in that case, it requires hakaza. So, but the problem is, if you do hakaza, you could actually create a mum. I mean, there's places where you make a puncture. Let's say you puncture it around the eyes or the ears or something like that. It may very well be a permanent puncture through, maybe it'll go through cartilage and won't regrow, whatever it is. But that would be a mum. And that mum is an isser. You're not allowed to put a mum in kachim, right? Now, there's no bigger mum than having that blood pressure, which is about to kill him. So therefore, it's putting a mum in a baal mum. That's essentially how it's going to relate to our sugya, you see. So if we start off with a bechor that now is ochas odam, so this is now, its life is endangered. Makizino to et adam b'makom she'en osim bo mum. But ain makizin et adam b'makom she'en osim bo mum. So if you're going to do hakaza, you have to do the hakaza in a place that is not going to make a mum on it. Because if you do the hakaza in a place where you are making a mum, so then you're making a mum, another mum on it. Divrei Rebbe Meir. So that means that according to Rebbe Meir, even though it has already a mum, it's nonetheless considered to be a new mum. So if you make this mum in a place where it's not going to be permanent, so fine. So then it's a mum over. And that, the truth is that in Bechoras, it's clear that Rabbi Meir is talking about that it doesn't even have a din of a mum over. But we won't get into the difference between permanent and impermanent, because that's a different shaila, whether a mum over is an usur in a place where it has a mum. The Chachamim Omrim, what's the difference? Yakiz, you can go ahead and do that hakaza wherever you want. After makom she'osim bo mum, even if it was, if it's already has a mum, so then there's no isur of making a mum. So then that means that there's no din of mum achar mum. But we're not going to allow you to shech the bechor based on that mum, because the truth is you should be allowed to. But, you know, it's always, we suspect those kohanim, as you remember, and we never allow a kohen to be able to eat a bechor on the basis of a mum that they caused. So even though this kohen is a vet, and he claims this is the only way that I could have alleviated the danger to this poor animal, we're not going to let him shech the bechor based on that. But he's allowed l'maisa to do it. Rabbi Shimon Omer? Remember, Rabbi Shimon Shita is that a dover she'ena miskaven is mutter. So therefore, says Rabbi Shimon, af nishchat al oto hamum. There's no problem. He can even shecht it on the basis of that mum, because why would we aser it? The point over here is that you did not do anything in the event that your kavana over here was in order to go ahead and do something that was mutter. So according to this, Rabbi Shimon is not going to answer it over here. And Dafka Rabbi Yehuda, who's even more chomer than Rabbi Meir, he says, even if this animal dies, you leave it alone and you do not do the hakaza. So in other words, basically, he says, like Rabbi Meir, it's usher to do a mum in a place where there's already mum. And he says that we're going to aser doing it anywhere because we're chayshish, and that if we allow you to do it, you'll do it in a place that will make a mum, and therefore you will be over on an issur d'oraisa. Because after all, the kohen is going to be very nervous about, this is called, it's a gavi rule, and I believe he already has it, however, it's good that he's got a magic pen that never writes anything if it's already written before. So this is called Adam Bohul Amamono. This is a halacha that comes up in many places, that you cannot allow a person to do an act which could be done beheter in order to save his property, but because of the fact that once he's got a heter to save his property, he's liable to lose control and just do everything instead of keeping it within bounds because he becomes desperate to save his property. And because of that, we will not allow it because he's very likely to come to actually creating a issur d'oraisa. Fine. So now, there are cases where everybody agrees about X following X. Let's say, everybody is made that when it comes to a korban mincha, that there's obviously a din of mechametz achar mechametz. So even between this machlokas over here, according to Rabbi Shimon, there's no iser of putting a mum in something that's already has a mum. But as we said, if you go ahead and do the aricha after somebody else did the lisha, or you do the afia, Each one of those is an additional step of chimutz, and it will be mechayev you. And there we did not have a machlokas at all, because remember, we learned that out of a pasuk. Because since it says lo te'aseh chametz, and it also says lo te'afeh chametz, and we learned from there that a davar shehaya bechlal, v'yotza min haklal was yotza lelamed. So that was no problem. And our sugya is definitely X after X is aser. Now there's another case where we have a pasuk that actually adds one X after another X. And in this case, the iser of castrating any animal where it's already been castrated. So let's say if you take a look in the pasuk, if you do additional castration, over here it means adding more powerful castration. Where do we see this? Well, it says, Uma'uch, v'chatut, v'natuk, v'charut. So over here we're talking about testicles that are crushed. So we start off with saying ma'uch. So the testicles were squeezed to the point that probably they're not going to be useful anymore. Or there could be even katut, which is further, which is crushed. Natuk is to detach the testicle, but it's still in the scrotum. And charut would mean to actually remove the testicle. Now, I ask you, im al-koret, he would be chayav. So then, if that's the case, I said it backwards, but in the other order it was, the charut v'natuk. So if the point is that even if you just cut the testicle, but it's still in the scrotum, I'll not take lo kol shekein. If you actually remove them, so then obviously you're going to be chayiv. So why does the Torah have to mention it? Ah, it must be that each one of these steps would be an additional act of castration. And therefore, you would be misares, acher misares. And over there, we also have a pasuk to say that you would be chayiv. So it's coming to tell me that in no take, acher, koret, you would be chayiv. So this is yet another case. The only machlokas that we had was dafka, the case of the matil mum, bebaal mum. But the other cases we had, the psukim. In that case, we have a problem. Because there, Rabbi Meir says, look, the pasuk says kol mum. Lo yebo. What's the point of adding kol mum? Means must be to tell me any mum, even if it already has a mum, should be aser. Rabbanan savre, that's only in the context of tamim yele ratzon. So there, then it says tamim yele ratzon, then kol mum lo yebo. So therefore it says tamim yele. Once it's not tamim yele, then it's not saying kol mum lo yebo. That's pretty tricky. What is Rabbi Meir going to do with that? Doesn't it say that the whole context of kol mum lo yebo is in tamim yele ratzon? But once it's not tamim lo ratzon, so it's irrelevant. No, says Rabbi Meir, tamim yele ratzon means that if you have an animal that is born, let's say it's born missing a leg, born with some type of fundamental deformity, which makes it a bal mum when it's born. So in that case, there's no iser of putting a mum. But where once it was kosher, and now it got a mum, such as our case of that bechor, it would be usher, Tanya's Rabbi Meir. Ah, please. An animal that's born a bal mum. It's like it's like a palm tree. I don't understand. It has there's no level of kedushas haguf on an animal that was born with a mum. I don't need a pasuk to tell me not to put a mum into something that's not an animal that's roy for the mizbeach. That's ridiculous. Okay, fine. So I'll tell you. What Rabbi Meir would say is that that's coming to be memayit when it says l'ratzon, that if you were already paid, l'me'ute psule ha'mukadoshim la'achar pidyayna, you had a korban that got a mum, and then you went ahead and you were paid it, so that din of pidyon, remember, is still usher to use, let's say, for aveda or for milking, or not milking, for shearing, right? So the salka daitach, you might have thought that hayo ve'asiri begiz of aveda, even though you were paid it, the Torah says it's usher to do aveda with it, and it's usher to shear it if it has wool. So maybe it means that even now, in the state of pidyon, it should also be usher with having a mum, b'mum amnami litzre. That's why it says that no, after it's padli, then there's no iser at all. So even though, according to Rabbi Meir, it is usher if it's not padli, the pasuk of Tamimi Alaratzon means once you've already taken off its kedusha, it's not a problem. So that's how Rabbi Meir would use the contextual words of Tamimi Alaratzon. But how did the Rabbanan use Rabbi Meir's raya of komum lo yiebo, which seems to include even if there is already a mum there, which according to Rabbi Meir is true up until the time that should be paid at it. According to the Rabbanan, ahumi boy lekidetanya kol mum lo yehebo eli ela shelo yehebo mum. Okay, that would mean you cannot do an act of putting a mum into a behemoth. But could you do something that would be a grama bialma? How do we know you can't do something that will cause a mum? So, for instance, let's say a guy could take a nice cookie dough and put it on the animal's ear. Or he would take a nice, delicious figgy and put it on the animal's ear. And then he would let the doggy go and bite the cookie dough or bite the dvela. And in doing so, he would actually create a mum. I didn't do it. The doggy made me do it. Man, oh man. And people are still going to claim to me that the Zoom doesn't know what it's doing, right? We're just creating the little gun here for fun. Okay, go ahead. Have your beliefs. People are ready to believe anything. So how do we know you can't even allow the doggy to make a mum on it? Mum, kol mum. Omar mum, v'omar kol mum. So kol mum is coming to tell me, even if it was a grama b'alma. Let's talk about another case that does have to do with a grama when it comes to a korban mincha. So let's say, eniach sa'or al gabei isa. A guy goes ahead, he puts down some leavening agent, sa'or, on top of the dough of the mincha, and then he goes and sits down to watch a TV program. And then, nitchamtzah me'elav, the mincha goes and becomes chametz. Well, he would still be chayev, even though he didn't do anything other than set it down, and at the moment that he set it down, it wasn't at that instant, it obviously didn't become chametz yet, he would still be chayev, the same way that he would if he did something like that on Shabbos. So let's say that you take a piece of meat and you put it on top of a nice barbecue fire, and then you sit down to watch TV. You're going to be chayev for doing tzliya on Shabbos, right? So this should be exactly the same. You make the mincha. I understand that you didn't make it, but you did the act which culminates in it becoming a chimutz on a mincha. So therefore you would be chayev, right? No different than Shabbos. What? Shabbos? Are you telling me that you're chayev on Shabbos just for putting a piece of meat on the barbecue? I thought, Maaseh Shabbat ki hai gavna, you're not chayev on. Umi mechayev? Now, this is pretty shocking, and we're going to explain it as we go along. Didn't Rabba Bar Bar Chana say that Rabbi Yochanan taught that in niach basra gabe gechalim, you put down on top of a barbecue, you put a nice piece of meat on top of that barbecue, so if you turned it over, and that way it got well barbecued on both sides, so then and only then you would be chayev on doing this tzliyan Shabbos. But lo yipechbo, if you didn't turn it over, you'd be potter. So what are you telling me it's like Shabbos? On the contrary, according to what Rabbi Yochanan just said, you actually would not be chayev on Shabbos for simply putting it on top of that brine. So lo yipechbo, you would be putter. So what are you telling me that you would be chayev over here like Shabbos? Actually, maybe you're putter on the mincha also for putting a piece of yeast on it. Omar Rava, Where did Reb Ami say that you would be chayiv? He was referring to a maisetz lish al Shabbos. He was talking about where you did a normal act of roasting it. So just like you're chayiv, basically on Shabbos, when you make sure that it gets completely baked, you're chayiv also with putting the thing on it, where you put the yeast on it so that it becomes entirely the same way you would do the maisetz li on Shabbos, to see to it that it actually becomes completely barbecued. So let's take a look at what that would mean. Now we'll understand how Rabbi Yochanan could have said something that sounds so wild. Gufa, Amar Rabba Bar Bachana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Let's take a look at what Rabbi Yochanan said, and let's try to figure out what he means. So he said, you put the meat on top of that brai, you're not going to be chayiv unless you turn it over. So tell me what the case is. Let's say we're talking about a case where what? Where if you hadn't turned it over, it never would have become cooked? I mean, so obviously, then it wasn't cooked. Lohi pechbo, never cooked, and therefore you're not chayiv. And if you're talking about a case where lo ma pechbo, na mi avi basho, but if it would have gotten cooked through and through without turning it over, then why is he not chayiv? You put it on, and it's going to complete itself over time and become cooked. Look, that's what it consists of. To cook on Shabbos consists of what? Of putting it on a fire that's going to cook it. So how could Rabbi Yochanan say you're putter in such a case? Why in the world would you not be chayiv for making a tzli on Shabbos? So the case would have to be the lo tzricha ela de ilohi pechbe, if you would not have turned it over, it would have gotten cooked to the point of being kemachal ben drusai. So remember this klal, and this is a gavi munach. So it's the concept of kemachal ben drusai. Drusai was a famous ganav, and they used to take their food very, very quickly in order to avoid getting caught by the cops. And so they would only do the absolute minimal necessary for preparing it and cooking it, and then they would split. So that's called kemachal ben drusai, which is one third of the normal of a roast. According to most shitas, Rambam says it's one half of the normal, but whatever the shear is, it would have cooked, but only on one side. And if he turns it over, it would cook only that absolute minimum on both sides. The chiddush of Rabbi Yochanan is that machal ben drusoi is only a meaningful shear if it cooks through and through kemachal ben drusoi. But if it only cooks on one side kemachal ben drusoi, it's not considered to be cooked at all. That's the chiddush of Rabbi Yochanan. So that if you would have left it on one side, it would have cooked, but only on that side, and only to the extent that it was the minimal shear. That's not called cooking. So therefore, if he was ma'apech ba, v'chi ma'apech ba, basho mishneit studim kemachal ben drusai, so then it would cook, again, only the minimal shear, but it would cook on both sides. And that, you would be chayev, and that's Rabbi Yochanan's chiddush. Kamash malan, deko mitzad echad, kemachal ben drusai, lav klumu. If something is cooked kemachal ben drusai, but only on one side, it's as if it's not cooked at all, which is a massive chiddush. Omar Rava, but if even one grogeret, and remember that's the shear of tzli on Shabbos, so if even one grogeret size of meat was completely cooked, not kemichel ben drusai, was completely cooked, albeit it didn't go through the whole piece. It was a nice, big, thick piece of meat. It doesn't matter. If you have one full grogeret that's fully cooked, so then you would be chayev, because that is the normal din of tzli. So what are you telling me? Says Ravina Taravashi. Only in one place? You said it has to be in one place. Why does it have to be in one place? I thought that the dinim of Shabbos is that it's mitztaref. As long as you have a total amount of cooking, that would be a grogeret. Where'd you come in throwing in that word b'mokam echad? I don't understand. B'shnayim o'shalsha mekamot lo? I mean, that's a beferish mission we had in Shabbos. There we were talking about making drilling holes. So it says over there, if you're kodeach kolshehu, any small hole, you would be chayev. You'd be chayev because of binyan. So I ask you, what does it mean? A tiny hole. A tiny hole? What use is a tiny hole? It must be kolshehu. L'may chazi, what's that going to be good for? It must mean that you did a series of little tiny holes, which in that series, since because through all of those holes they can be mitzaref, and that one piece now becomes essentially loose, that's called chazilat siruf, but you don't need to do the whole malach in one place. So why isn't that true over here? You can have things that are not significant enough to have a shear, to be mitzaref one with the other. It's the same thing should be with the, you have enough meat, you could take enough meat to put it together to a grogeret. Why is that any different than the case of kiduach? It should be exactly the same thing. So I don't understand why you threw in those words, b'mokom echad. No, says the Gemara. We're talking about one tiny hole. So what good is one tiny hole? Tiny hole doesn't build you anything, does it? Yes, it does, in the right place. Suppose you need to make a little tiny hole in a lock. And in that key to the lock, you're going to insert one little tiny pin. And that tiny pin is going to turn the pin that's in the lock. Now, is that significant or not? Well, it sure is if you got $1 million in the safe, isn't it? So that means that one little tiny hole is actually significant in and of itself under the right circumstances. And that's what we're referring to. And therefore, it would be not b'shnayim v'shlosha mikomot. Whereas ikeni amri omar Rava, others say it that no, actually what Rava said originally is you don't need to have it in all in one place. It could be collect the grogeret even in two or three different places. I don't care. Afilu b'shnayim u'shlosha mekomot, because you could be mitzaref the different pieces. And in this version, the case of the kiduach was a raya. Amar Ravina Ravashi, yep. We see exactly that from the Mishnah that says a kodeach kol shehu chayev. What do you think that means? And it can't be one tiny little hole. What good is one tiny little hole? So it must be telling me that you could be mitzarev two or three different places to do that kiduach, right? The chazilat siruf. And that's a raya to Rava. You see, you don't need all your meat in one place. You could be mitzarev. They grow garret in different places. So, and in this case, the Gemara is saying, no, it's no raya, because it might be referring to Olam B'Mokom Echad, and it's Chazal of Adeaklida. Maybe it's referring to this very important hole that gets you $1 million in that safe. Okay, Rabbosai.